My question is, can you talk about the political pressure that you get from both political parties when you make your decisions?
So the question was about political pressure on decision-making the Federal Open Market Committee. Honestly, I think this is a totally politics-free organization. I've never felt any pressure from any politician in terms of influencing my decisions. Certainly, Congress, as is appropriate, I think, the chair of the Federal Reserve, now Janet Yellen, previously Ben Bernanke, goes to testify before Congress twice a year about monetary policy and receives questions about the stance of monetary policy. And certainly at that point, members of Congress will express their opinions about the stance of monetary policy. I view that as absolutely appropriate. But no, this is a group of technocrats who get together. The discussion is, from appropriately arcane. it's basically about what model should we be using to try to forecast the economy. One person says this model is better than that model, and we try to fight that out to figure out. These are all very important things, but we're talking about exactly the way you want us to be talking about them, I would say, which is to try to figure out how to achieve our goals the most effective way. It doesn't mean we agree, actually, at the last meeting. Two people dissented from the decision of the committee. But, those dissents are not politically based. They're about differences of views about how we should best achieve our goals.
The European Union kind of seems like it's on a deflationary trajectory. Is there any danger in the United States of that, or what are your thoughts on that one?
So, I think the Europe's facing a situation where their target for their inflation rate is somewhat I'm not going to get the exact wording right, but they want to be a little bit below 2%. That's basically what their target is. Right now, inflation in Europe is running below 1%, and it's been on a disinflationary path over the last couple of years. I think we want to be really careful not to get ourselves in a similar situation. That's what I would say. We're not in that situation now, to be clear. Inflation in this country has been averaging about 1.5% per year over the past, since December of 2007. And right now, if you look back over a past year, it's about 1.5% as well. But I think if you look at, you don't want to be overly sanguine about this inflationary situation in terms of, that is, about its remaining as high as it is, because of the fact that when interest rates are as low as they are, it's hard to provide the stimulus you would need to bring inflation back. And so I think we have to be very cautious and careful about starting to raise rates, because we do want to make sure that inflation's on this path back to 2% before we do it. Otherwise, we risk getting ourselves into it wouldn't be my modal outlook by any means, but it's a risk. We're creating more of a risk that we would end up in more of a European situation. We want to be very cautious about that. And that's how the Bank of Japan, I think, generally agreed, got into the situation where they're in, where we're making extraordinary efforts now to get to raise inflation back up, but they were at zero for, close to 20 years in terms of, or below zero, excuse me, in terms of inflation for 20 years. And that's, you have to be very cautious about going about the process of removing accommodation, reducing stimulus, because it does create, you have to be very careful not to create the belief in the public and in the markets that you're not really targeting the target you claim you're targeting. And so that's you have to, it's like anything else you do in life. You're all, many of you are business leaders. You know that if you establish a goal for your corporation, you have to take actions always that are consistent and communicate in ways that are consistent with that goal, or you're going to create doubt among your employees, among your customers. It's the same for us.
This might be a good follow-up to that question then. Yeah. I think for many years people saw the role of the Federal Reserve as controlling inflation. And obviously in the last 7 years, it's been really focused on economic stimulus. And despite the framework statement you made, a lot of people feel that's really the focus of the Federal Reserve today. Is that a fair assessment? I mean, and pretty much have taken the eye off the inflation issue?
No, I you know, with respect, I guess I would disagree with that statement. I think that had we had only a single mandate, suppose we had only Congress had said to us, keep inflation at 2%, promote price stability, and we had converted that into a 2% inflation target. We didn't have a second mandate on employment at all. I think we would be doing exactly the same actions. And the reason is because inflation's been running low. And so what your goal is to try to bring inflation back up to 2%. You were doing all you can then to bring inflation back to 2% to avoid the European situation or the Japanese situation I made reference to. So I don't think, as I said at the beginning, I'm speaking for myself, but I really don't think we would have been doing anything differently if we'd had only a single mandate. And it comes back to this point I made earlier that the mandates are really complementary to one another. When you have a shock of the kind we had in December 2007 that drives down employment, drives up unemployment, it also tends to push down on inflation. I will say a lot of the communication from the committee has emphasized the fact that we are concerned about low employment as well. But I think that's also appropriate because we have two mandates. So you wouldn't want to be, if you have two mandates, you shouldn't be communicating to the public only about the one. But I think what you're seeing in the Federal Reserve or the FOMC, and again, I should be speaking for myself here, is you're not facing a risk when unemployment unemployment's back down to the low sixes. When unemployment's at 9 or 8%, you're not sitting and worrying about inflation running above your target. It's just unemployment. There's so much slack, so much excess resources available for utilization that you don't face those pressures on prices. So we were able to adopt stimulus of the kind you're noting in order to facilitate a faster return of employment back to its maximum level because inflation, we felt and knew is too strong, but felt very confident inflation would remain under control. But as I say, even if we had a single mandate, inflation mandate alone, we'd be doing the same things.
I just wanted to know if gasoline prices are part of the inflation equation.
Very much so. Yeah. So the personal consumption expenditure price index I made reference to includes all prices, goods for all goods and services, including gasoline. Now I'll note that gasoline prices actually have been a source of low inflation over the past year, because gas prices are now lower today than they were a year ago. No, you asked about gasoline prices. I was just. Did you say grocery or gasoline? I'm sorry.
I said gasoline, but I was wondering if the cost of gasoline is what's driving grocery prices up.
No, I think that there's. There's a lot of sources for why food prices are going up, but the gas prices have been coming down, so it's harder to draw that connection between those two. I think we do use an index that includes both food and energy goods, as I just described. We're trying to target that. What's really tricky, though, is when you're making monetary policy, if we were to change interest rates at our next meeting, it would not affect inflation immediately. It takes time to affect inflation. And so you really have to be forecasting where inflation is going to go in the next year or two. I made reference to the fact that I think of inflation is going to be low for the next two, really for the next 4 years below target. And that's the kind of outlook you have to be looking, and there's lots of uncertainties, but that's what you have to be going forward. The path of gasoline prices over the past year is not really that useful in terms of forecasting where they're going to be going in the coming year. And 2008 is just a tremendous example of this. Gas prices shot upwards. I'm sure some of you remember this, that probably got close to $4 or more in this part of the world. And you might have thought, wow, inflation. If you just looked at measures of inflation, they were very high at that point. But that was not a good forecast what was going to happen to inflation going forward, because gas prices plummeted over the rest of the year. And inflation went negative over that time frame. So that's why people strip out food and energy goods, gasoline, is because they're not that useful in terms of forecasting where inflation is going to be. We're trying to target overall inflation, but actually including food and energy, good prices, don't help us forecast where it's going to go.
You might need a crystal ball for this question, but if we were to implement a two-year strategy to get to a 2%, what would interest rates and unemployment look like?
That's a great question. I think that you know, I've made reference to how the outlook for inflation is now that my outlook for inflation is that it's going to be running below 2% over that two-year time horizon I just made reference to. I think it would make you more cautious about the removal of accommodation. So you hear a lot of discussion in the media and a lot of observers making reference to, you know, maybe interest rates will start to go up in 2015. I think if you had this two-year time horizon, you would be a lot more cautious about having that message come out of the committee. I think you'd be thinking about, boy, interest rates, maybe they shouldn't be going up as rapidly as that dialogue suggests. And then unemployment, I think that having this two-year time horizon would, given where unemployment is, would be also stimulative for the path of unemployment. I think unemployment and other labor market metrics would recover more rapidly. You know, I think one of the things we have to be careful about right now is that I think unemployment is, if anything, is an overestimate of where we are in the labor market recovery. So unemployment, as I made reference to earlier, is down near the low sixes. But there are other measures of labor market recovery that don't look as strong as that. And having this two-year time horizon on inflation, I think, would facilitate a faster rate of recovery in those other metrics. For example, the number of people who are part-time but would like to work more hours remains historically very high. It'd be good to get that number down more rapidly. Having this two-year time horizon would be on inflation would be helpful in that.
I have a question. You said that you're not directly impacted by politics, but with regard to the changes in the definition of inflation and the changes in the definition of unemployment, aren't you indirectly politically affected?
So, yeah, we don't measure those variables ourselves, if that's what the question is. Those measures are done by other branches and other agencies of the government. And how are those, you know, the changes in those definitions, would change what we're aiming, I guess, for. I'm not aware of any substantial changes in the definition of either of those in the 5 years that I've been part of the FOMC, though.
So some of your meetings while you're here in the next couple days are around workforce development and how it matches up with economic development. What is your interest in workforce?
Well, so one of our goals is to promote maximum employment. What does that mean exactly? We're trying to get the maximum level of employment over the long run that's consistent with our 2% inflation objective. And lots of pieces of information help inform that assessment of where we're going to go, including questions about do we have the training and the available workers to match up with the jobs that are available. And so those kinds of questions are helpful in trying to inform us about where unemployment is likely to settle, where right now the fraction of Americans who have a job, that are over the age of 16 who have a job, is much lower than it was in December 2007 when the recession started. How much is that likely to come back up without having inflation go well above our target? Well, questions about the pool of skills that are available in the set of workers that are available relative to what's being asked for by companies, that really matters to that kind of question. Because if the skills don't match up well, then there's going to be a lot of companies who are bidding for very few workers, driving up wages, driving up prices. So we have to figure that. Those are the kinds of things we have to ask about and figure out.
I understand the benefits of low interest rates, but there's another side to the coin, too, and that is for a lot of Americans on fixed income, particularly older Americans, it's kind of taken a conservative investment off the table. Is that something that gets talked about in your discussions?
Oh, very much so. I mean, it's absolutely a consideration that comes up. You know, we have a limited set of tools to accomplish objectives set for us by Congress. So our objectives are, as I've talked about, to keep inflation at 2% and to promote max employment. Those tools, I think we have to recognize. First of all, it benefits all Americans, regardless of age or what their asset portfolio looks like, if we're able to achieve those objectives. If we're able to keep inflation at 2%, if we're able to promote maximum employment, these are good things for all Americans. And so that's where the benefit lies. At the same time, I think somebody who is a saver through short-term liquid assets is going to not be benefited as much from our policies as someone who's not saving in that way. The final comment I'll make about that is we're not keeping interest rates at low levels because we like having interest rates at low levels. We'd much rather not have them at low levels. We're there because economic conditions are forcing us to be there in order to achieve our goals. Those same economic... Now, what are the economic conditions that are making us go there? A key force is that there's an uncertainty around the world that are leading people to save more. So since the end of 2008 through 2007, after 2007, 2008, the economic crisis that hit around the world has made people much more nervous about what kinds of shocks that can affect them in their lives. That's led them to save more, want to hold safe kinds of assets. Well, if you're a person who is typically going to be doing that anyways, the older Americans you made reference to, and you have a lot more people around the world who want to do the same thing as you want to do, that makes the rate of return that you're trying to achieve much lower. That's why we have had to lower the rates we're trying to target in order to achieve our goals as well. People don't want to spend, and we have to lower the rate in order to stimulate them to spend and generate the employment we want to see and the inflation we want to see. But certainly, different groups of Americans are going to be benefited different amounts by the kinds of policies we follow. That's absolutely correct.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.